Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnall-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Renee Schmidt. Tell me, Renee, did your background in writing help your teaching career? And come to that, did your teaching help you with your writing?
It's an excellent question. Absolutely, yes. My background in writing, it really helped me because when I was dealing with reluctant readers, if I had kids that really didn't care to read at all, I found it much easier to write stories about them using their names than it was to try to find a suitable book in the library. So I would gear, I would gear a story to them and try to entice them into reading from that. And also my teaching helped me with my writing as well. It worked the other way because when I started writing the books on Canadian disasters, I engaged my students in the project. And they saw me as a very normal, a flawed human being. But they would see how a book would come together. So I would ask them to help me with research sometimes with smaller things in research. But also I would ask them to proofread for kid interest. So if the story seemed too long or a bit boring or something else like that, they would inform me of that. So in response to that, in return for that, their names were printed in the acknowledgement sections of all the books that I've written while I was teaching.
Oh, that's a lovely story. I'm sure they enjoyed getting engaged in putting a book together. Yeah. It must have been a really inspiring thing for them to do. So in 2008, you ventured into fiction very successfully. Do you feel tempted to write another novel?
Well, in fact, yes, the novel I wrote, Leaving Fletchville, was very successful. But I do have three other manuscripts at home. Two of them, I used my own son's names for the main characters. And the difficulty with that was when I got a rejection, it was almost like somebody calling your kid ugly, you know. I get actually very nice rejections. They're very kind. However, I had put so much personal effort into these stories that it's difficult to pitch them again.
Well, don't we all hate to be rejected, but still. Tell us about Leaving Fletchville. What inspired you to write this story of racism, fatherhood, bullying, and friendship?
Well, the story begins with a story my mother told us around in the 1960s that she had read in a news article about a girl who, I think her parents were inadequate. They might have been alcoholics or they had drug addictions or something. And this responsible girl who looked older than her age, I think she was only 14 or 15, she took her siblings and herself and snuck them away and moved to another city, moved into an apartment and got a part-time job, made sure her siblings were washed and dressed and went to school on time, got well fed. And she took care of them as an older sister and got away with it for quite some time before she was found out by the authorities that she was too young. When they discovered what an excellent job she did, they allowed her to keep custody of the siblings and to be a family on their own, and they simply helped her in that environment. I use that was the core of the story, and then the rest is based on students also that I have taught.
Uh-huh. Where's it set?
The setting is a small town, and the town is also a mixture of three different places that I've lived. So it's a mixture of, the school is similar to Murray Centennial School that I taught in the Trenton border. The town resembles Brighton, and it also resembles parts of the beaches area of Toronto where I lived, and part of North York and Toronto as well.
Oh, yes. Please introduce us to some of the characters.
So the narrator is Brandon, and so his frequent visits to the principal's office allows him to spy on what's going on. He's constantly being kicked out of class, so he is watching what's going on through the school. He walks around at night, he listens at doors. He is kind of a snoop, but he in fact learns what is going on in most of the town. The other kid's Leon, it's the other main character, and Leon moves to the school with his brother and sister, and the mystery behind them, they have a father that helps them register at the school, or so everyone thinks. And Leon is, in fact, this mature, older sibling who's taking care of a younger sister and a younger brother. He works part-time at a grocery store. They pretend there is a father on site, but there is no father. And Leon and his brother and sister are black. They are descendants of the original black loyalist who settled in the Shelburne area of Nova Scotia And so there's a bit of history thrown in there. And being black in a small town in eastern Ontario, there is prejudice and things that raise their head. So Leon and his sister Winnie and little brother Sam are real characters, and based on kids that I've taught in the past. And they do their best to try to stay below the radar, not to be observed too much. And inevitably, things happen to them to kind of bring them exposure that they don't want. And their biggest secret, of course, is the fact that they're living without a parent.
Mm-hmm. So they are in some way connected with the narrator. Hmm?
Yes, and Brandon is the first to discover their reality. And then Brandon, he would have a choice either to inform on them or to help them out. He does the obvious kid thing, and he helps them out. And it actually matures. The character Brandon grows and matures through influence of Leon. Leon is a kid who's been forced into maturity by the situations at home. Brandon is lazy and doesn't care about much, doesn't care to do well at school. But by his friendship with Leon, he actually matures quite a bit. So there's some growth in his character over the time of the novel.
Well, would you like to read to us from Leaving Fletchville?
Okay, I'll read a part where there was actually a fight based on there was a racist comment made toward Sam, the younger brother, and Leon and Brandon. Brandon is actually a very strong boy and a fighter, and he likes to fight. He's good at it. Leon is just pent-up energy. There's a racist slur made. There's some bullying going on, and they respond with it. So just starting in the middle of that. The big guy didn't answer but glanced at his buddy and began to walk past us. I knew he was about to do something sneaky, but I wasn't fast enough. Just as he passed Leon, he turned and punched him in the ear with a huge fist. Leon staggered, taken by surprise, and I thought he would fall. I started toward him, but he was up quickly. Like a cornered cat, he jumped on the older boy, hitting, cuffing, and kneeing him. The two fell to the ground, wrestling. The second boy grabbed Leon by the shirt collar and tore it off, trying to pull him off his friend, who was now getting the worst of the fight. It was time for me to step in. While Leon fought with fury, I was all business. Time seems to slow for me when I am fighting. Just like other people are good at chess or hockey or baseball, I'm good at fighting. The second kid let go of Leon when I hooked him in the head with my left. He turned in a rage and swung at me. I ducked his fist and waited that extra half second until he was off balance before I threw my second punch right onto his chin. That should have put his lights out, but it didn't. He reeled backward, arms spinning, and when he caught his balance, he came at me again. He was my size, but a couple of years older. He didn't think like a fighter, though. He came running at me, arm and fist back, ready for a big punch. I watched it coming. I waited until he couldn't change direction, and then I ducked his fist and punched him deep in the gut. He doubled over in pain. I kneed him in the nose. His hands came up to his face, and he staggered backward. I could have hit him again, but decided to wait and see what he would do. "You're that Brandon kid," he mumbled as blood streamed out between his fingers. "I'll get you later," he sputtered as he stumbled away. "Anytime," I said. Leon, meanwhile, was wrestling with his opponent. It was ugly. Leon had managed to get on top of the other boy and started pummeling him with his fists. Leon was strong but clumsy. His hits were hard and badly aimed. Even so, all the guy was doing was trying to defend himself. "Leon, stop. Leave him alone. He's done." I began to pull him off. "Dirty bastard." "Leon, stop. The cops will come." "Cops? Where?" Leon looked around. "Not yet, but let's not stick around. Let's get out of here. Sam, come on. We're going home." Leon's voice sounded funny. His lower lip was already swelling from a punch. Sam had watched the fight with wide eyes. Now, like it would be for any 10-year-old, his mind jumped to what was really important to him. "You said I could go to Trevor's," Sam wailed. The insult and the fight were suddenly too much for him. He began to wail. "You said I could go to Trevor's. You promised. Those jerks live around here. I don't want them coming after you." "You promised," cried Sam. "That's it. I said no." "You promised." "No, you're not going," Leon was shouting. "I am so going." "You go and you're grounded." "You can't ground me. Watch me." Sam was crying uncontrollably now. He started to walk away, stumbling on the uneven ground. Leon sucked on a split knuckle and looked a bit guilty. We walked behind Sam for a few steps, Leon looking over his shoulder every few seconds as if an army of police vehicles was on the way. The high school guys had taken off. Sam sniffled as he walked ahead of us. Leon called out to him, "Okay, you can go over to his place tomorrow. You mean it? I mean it. Don't make me change my mind, Leon said. Sam's tears dried up and he ran ahead, happy again. Leon and I walked more slowly. I was still all pumped up. The fight hadn't lasted long enough. I was shadow punching and ready to relive how we'd beaten those two racist creeps. I looked over at Leon and saw a tear trickle down his face. Hey, you hurt? You break a bone or something? No. What's wrong, buddy? We just beat those guys. It was great. You were great. Leon sat on a low fence that ran beside the path. It'll never work, he said as he wiped a tear away. I just can't do it anymore. Do what? I said. His head hung down and he spoke so quietly I could barely hear him. Be the dad, Leon said.
What?
Be the dad, Leon repeated. You mean tell Sam when he can go out and all that? If you're oldest, your dad leaves you in charge, right? You're filling in for your dad when he's away, right? No, Leon kicked at a rock. There is no dad.
Thank you, Rennie. That was really interesting. So, many, many thanks to Rennie for coming in, popular author of Junior History and of the novel Leaving Fletchville, and maybe of you'll be reading the ones he has in his drawers soon. Where can readers buy your books, Rennie?
Well, Lighthouse Books in Brighton always have a stock. Catherine and Dan Corbett are friends of mine. They have the book there. Prior to that, the previous owner was also very good.
Mia.
But also, they're available through Chapters, Indigo, major bookstores. They are all listed online as being available. Usually they're not in stock. They usually have to order them. Also, they can be got through the Scholastic websites and through Orca Books. Leaving Fletchville is an Orca book. I have my own blog, and I sell sometimes if I'm in the area. I have my own copies of the books as well. If you look up Books by Renee Schmidt at blogspot.ca, or you can phone me at 613-885-1100. That's an easy number. I have some copies for sale as well. I do also school visits and that kind of thing as a retired teacher.
Right. Thank you. So, to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all our broadcasts are archived. We love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our programs. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another show next week on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.